Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food headlines, community gardens, and Cut Brooklyn. Michael Pollan on Oprah, the iPad revealed, and Haiti's food distribution problems were top news stories last week. Today, we'll chat all three and more. Our food headline segment guest today is Janelle Nicole. Janelle is a chef, food activist, and host of Cooking with Jen. Welcome to Hot Grease, Janelle.
Hi, thank you.
Well, I guess I could have said Jen. You go by Jen.
Yes.
So first up, let's talk Haiti and the ongoing issues with their food distribution. Mm-hmm. There has, in my opinion, been very little coverage about what's really going on in reference to the food distribution problems in Haiti. But there was one article, more so a blog in New York Times, describing the scene in, I think, Port-au-Prince, of people basically being tear gassed, in line, people bum rushing trucks, food trucks. And basically, it seems that the UN and the World Food Program not having a system to distribute food. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think it's absolutely ridiculous about the fighting and all the things that were going on. I heard that some of the people that were giving out food were actually fighting some of the Haitians. And my thoughts are they do need to come up with a better system. I don't know too much about strategies or what they could do, but they definitely need to think about things before they step out into a situation like that, especially when people haven't been eating properly, they're malnourished, they're thirsty, they need all these things. Of course, they're going to be upset and crazy and trying to fight for these foods. But I mean, before you go in there, I think they really need to think about a strategy of how to approach these people.
So the article or the blog that was in New York Times on January 27th, which was last week, the person interviewed saying, quote, "If you don't have a plan to distribute food and water properly, how will you help us build up a devastated country?" So it's like people's thoughts are, and let's go back. We had a Seeds for Haiti, the guy from Seeds from Haiti here in Brooklyn on the show, and we all know that this whole food issue in Haiti has been going on from quite some time in reference to food rebellions in Haiti. So I wonder if this problem is going to be fixed in terms of systems put in place, the rebuilding of Haiti.
I'm hoping that it will be fixed pretty soon. I mean, it's a pretty amazing to see, you know, when disasters like this happen, how can you not have a plan to come and take care of thousands of people? How can you just figure you can just walk in there, it's going to be an easy line and everyone's just going to wait patiently and just, you know,
right,
take things patiently? That's ridiculous.
We're definitely going to continue to follow this and do at least monthly updates here at Hot Grease about what's going on in Haiti. Next up, so Michael Pollan sat down with Oprah and preached the good food gospel.
Oh, yes.
I did not see the episode. Did you see it?
I saw clips and I've heard about it.
So what did you think?
First of all, I just realized he just came out with a new book. I didn't know until I heard this
food
Oprah
rules
thing. Yeah. And his rules, from what I saw and what I've read, are pretty simple. One of the things that he said was, eat food, mostly plants, not too much. I think that's a pretty simple and easy philosophy to follow.
And some of our listeners, Michael Pollan has several books out. He's basically known as the good food movement ambassador or voice. Mm-hmm. I think he is a professor on the West Coast, Berkeley maybe? Maybe UCLA at Berkeley. But that's Michael Pollan. So that's one of his basic things. He's been saying that thing for years now.
Yeah. Another thing that I heard him say was, you want fast food, make it yourself. I love fast food. I love burgers. I love fries. I love pizza. I love Chinese food. But all of that I make at home myself, because you know what? What's in all of those things that you're buying in the stores?
Right.
You know, making you sick, giving you diabetes, making you gain weight. I prefer to make everything at home. And that's what my website and my show is about. Making the same things that you can buy outside, but in a healthier way.
So a bigger question, a few of my Twitter friends posed. The question is, does this signify a tipping point for the movement? Michael Pollan being on Oprah, knowing the power of Oprah.
I would say that. I mean, Oprah is one of the most powerful people on the planet. So if you're up on that show and you got a lot of people listening to you and seeing what you have to say, why not?
So you think it's a tipping point?
I definitely think it's a tipping point.
For a certain segment or for mainstream America?
For mainstream.
Right.
Oprah's mainstream.
Yeah, I think there's a huge population of folks that definitely did not watch Oprah that day. And
they're going to have to play some reruns. She's got it coming on several different channels, right?
Yeah, I think she talked about Food Inc. as well, that same show, and Alicia, what's her name? Silverstein?
Silverstone.
Oh, okay.
Alicia Silverstone.
I think she's a vegetarian, but she was on there as well. I haven't seen any of the show, but I definitely need to go and check it out. So on to the iPad. In my opinion, this technology, the iPad, signals the move of magazines completely to digital formats. I know a few months ago we talked about Esquire magazine. I think we probably mentioned Patrick, our very own Patrick Martins from Heritage Radio Network, was in the issue, the augmented reality issue, where you could basically take the Esquire magazine, hold it up to your computer, and you receive this extra digital content. And for me, in my opinion, this is going to move magazines into completely digital realm, and websites such as your website, Jen's Journey, and Serious Eats and Food 52. They're going to become bigger media players and create steady streams of revenue. Do you agree?
I do agree. And Apple is on the money. They're on the mark. They know what to do and what to bring out for people. And they're ahead of, you know, everyone else. And I don't even watch television. I don't buy magazines. I don't really buy books. Everything is on the internet. And this book allows you to, or this iPad allows you to have all of that media in one. So I'm definitely thinking that's the way to go.
So would you subscribe to a digital magazine if you had the iPad or some other computer, and Bon Appetit has a digital format and you just pay for a subscription in every month?
I definitely would.
Yeah, I think this is great, and I want to hear your opinion on this. I think this will actually give food bloggers payment for special content and access. This will give an opportunity. If you blog every day and you have a huge following and you want to add additional content that may be some kind of application or compatible to the iPad, in my opinion, if I have any blogger friends listening, get with the developer and figure out how you can create that and come up with a model so people could subscribe. I would totally pay.
I would totally pay too. That was one of the questions that I had in mind when I was watching the launch of the iPad. I am definitely interested in cutting out any extra, you know, paper or things in my heavy bag and just carrying that thing around and just doing what I can on that.
Moving on to, I must say, Janelle brought this gorgeous, tell our listeners the tart that you brought.
Well, this morning I really wanted to bring you a treat. So I looked in my fridge and came up with this pear cardamom almond tart.
Okay, the next thing we were going to talk about is Girl Scout cookies, but forget the Girl Scout cookies and recipes for Girl Scout cookies. Let's definitely spend the last minute of this show talking about this cardamom and your website. Just briefly tell our listeners about your website and anything special that you have going on.
Well, my website, like I said earlier, is healthier alternatives to the everyday foods that we eat. I also have a TV show, and also it's on my website, Cooking with Jen, and I focus on seasonal local ingredients, and I make all kinds of things like this tart. Some of the things that I'm doing right now with my community, I'm from East New York.
Oh, okay. You're born and raised in East New York?
I'm born and raised in actually Crown Heights. Oh, but I live in East New York.
Didn't know that.
Now.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And I'm very much invested in the community. I work a lot with East New York Farms. I do a lot of cooking demos with WIC centers all around the community. And we have one big event coming up on Friday. It's a grub party. We're inviting chefs, cooks, food activists, food bloggers, anyone interested in food. We're inviting everyone to come to the United Community Centers. You can get all the details on my website, jinsjourney.com. But it's going to be Friday at 8 o'clock. Everyone can come and bring a dish, and we're just going to talk about the food initiatives going on in Brooklyn and talk about some of the issues that we have in East New York and other neighborhoods in Brooklyn.
Well, two questions, and then we're going to go and have a short break. Is this recipe on your website for the tart? I haven't had it yet, but it looks apps and smells delicious.
It will be later on today.
Ah, great, great. So thank you for joining us on Hot Grease. And we would love to have you again doing food headlines or talking about what's going on with your show. You're going to stick around to segment 2 and 3?
I will.
Great. We'll take a short break and we'll be back with Community Gardens.
All the single ladies, all the single ladies, all the single ladies. Now put your hands up, up in the club, club. Just broke up, up. I'm doing my own little thing. You decided to dip, dip. And now you want a trip, but another brother noticed me. I'm up on him, him. He up on me, don't pay him any attention. Just cry my tears, give 3 good years, tears. Can't be mad at me. Cause if you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. Don't be mad at what you see, that he want it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. Oh, 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 oh. Permission, did I mention? Don't pay him any attention. Cause you had your turn, turn. And now you're gonna learn what it really feels like to miss me. Cause if you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. Don't be mad at what you see, that he want it. If you like it, then you should've put a ring on it. Oh,
welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives of Hot Grease on heritageradionetwork.com. Over the past year, hands down, Community Gardens is the most talked about sustainable food tool. Our goal for the next 10 minutes is to shed light on the history, victories, and future of the beloved Oasis. On the phone, we have Karen Washington, president of New York City Community Garden Coalition. Welcome to High Grease, Karen. Ah, no Karen. So it's great. We still have Jen in the studio. We still have Jen in the studio.
Okay.
So we're going to take a few seconds and see if we can get Karen back on the phone. But let's talk about the Girl Scout cookie thing.
Okay.
So people, this is Girl Scout cookie time. I never really buy Girl Scout cookies.
I don't either.
Yeah. I wonder, are they healthy now? Do they like trans fat and gluten free?
I think it's still along the lines of Chips Ahoy Oreo cookies.
Really? Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
That's bad.
I haven't heard any changes in the recipes. So
I really need to Google that.
Hey, Nicole, we have her on the line now.
Ah, so we have Karen back on the line. So like I was saying before, Karen, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. So Karen, let's talk the evolution of community gardens in New York City and the United States.
Yes, well, community gardens, it's not something that's new. It really started back in the late 60s and early 70s, especially in New York, when there was an episode of people moving from the inner cities up into the suburbs, and we call it the white flight. And as a result, it left a lot of buildings that were abandoned and vacant. And those people who could not move but rather stay took charge and turned a lot of those empty lots into community gardens.
Would you say this is the same story for other urban cities in the United States?
This is the same story for other urban cities around the United States, not only happening back in the early 60s and late 70s, but what is really happening in today, just like in Detroit. There are a lot of urban cities throughout this country, because of economic reasons, that there are abandoned buildings, there are a lot of empty lots. And so people, instead of standing and not doing anything, have gathered together and turned a lot of these empty lots into urban farms and community gardens across this country.
So you mentioned Detroit. Detroit is just a fascinating city for tons of reasons. And I've noticed an increased coverage in Detroit farming and urban farming. LA Times had an article at the end of December talking about the efforts in Detroit. What are your thoughts on what's going on in Detroit?
Well, I was blessed to visit Detroit a couple of months ago. I was asked to speak about the urban agricultural phenomenon that's happening in New York City. And I was just impressed about the resolve of so many people, because in Detroit, they have so many abandoned lots, vacant lots, and they have a group of people who won't say no. They won't say no to despair. They've gotten together and brick by brick taken these empty lots and turned them into community gardens and urban farm, and they get no money whatsoever from any municipality. A lot of it is just sweat equity and what they get from local nonprofits. So I tell the people out in Detroit that you've got brothers and sisters here in New York City that know the struggle and that we're with them 100%.
So, Karen, we cannot have this conversation without talking about the Michelle Obama effect. And as you know, she is planning to focus in 2010 on childhood obesity and healthy eating. Do you think that this effort to talk about healthy eating and childhood obesity will continue to push the community gardening agenda?
I think that this is something that the community gardens, I know in New York City, I can speak for New York City, have been doing for such a long time. And basically what Michelle Obama has done is put the federal government's stamp on it. I think a lot of inner cities have been doing it for such a long time. And what she did was just bring a national attention to it. And I think in the long run, it'll be something that's very, very good, not only for the federal government, but for cities throughout the nation. And also, this is not an effort that's happening just in New York City, but this is something that's happening globally. And it was a great thing that Michelle Obama took the foresight to bring it on a national level.
So, Karen, speaking of spokespersons and national, something special is happening this weekend with a great speaker. Do tell.
Yes. On Saturday, this Saturday, February 6th, will be our annual Community Garden Forum. We have been doing this forum for the last 6 years, and we are honored to have Livia Marquez, who is the horticultural specialist appointed by the Department of Agriculture under the Obama administration. She is the person in charge of the People's Garden Initiative at the USDA, and we are honored to have her. We have this forum is especially special for all New Yorkers because, as many of our listeners know, the agreement between the city and community gardeners expires in September 2010. So we're having this forum to see how we can, with city agencies, with community gardeners, with our partners, to come up with ways that community gardeners and community gardens can be permanent. So this is a monumental forum that is happening, and I'm sorry to our listeners because it's sold out, but the fact that so many people now are really involved and really seeing that community gardens are preserved, that people are now coming out and wanting to join community gardens, that there's now an emphasis on urban agriculture. This is indeed a monumental forum, and hopefully it will move towards some way that community gardens can be preserved, that we can have more gardens, more urban farms, and that urban agriculture can be at the forefront of health, wealth, well-being, land preserve, and community spirit.
Karen, thank you so much for joining us on Hot Grease today. We definitely need to get you in the studio so you can talk more about this New York City agreement with the Attorney General's office, so we can just get an in-depth look on that. So hopefully in the future we can get you in so we can break that down to the listeners and have them advocate on behalf of New Yorkers and community gardens. But thank you for joining us on Hot Grease, and I will see you on Saturday, Karen.
Thank you so much. Peas and chard.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
After a short break, we'll be back with Cut Brooklyn.
Feel it coming in the air.
Yeah.
Hear the screams from everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to the thrill.
I'm ready.
It's a dangerous love affair.
Come on.
Can't be scared when it goes down. Got a problem, tell me now. Only thing that's on my mind is who gonna run this town tonight.
Said it, we are. This is Rock Nation. Pledge your allegiance. Get your boutiques on. All black, everything. Black cars, all black, everything. And our girls are black birds, riding with their diligence. I can't more in depth if you boys really written enough. This is not familiar.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. A cut above the rest, the perfect phrase for Joel Bukowicz, knife maker and mastermind behind Cut Brooklyn. Joel, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you very much.
So, Joel, this is the million-dollar question. I did not ask you before the show. Did you grow up in a butcher shop, or were you like a Boy Scout and you were just fascinated with knives? What's the story behind Joel?
I guess I would say I wasn't allowed to like have or play with knives when I was a kid, but
wow.
I had some sort of fascination probably with them. So, you know, it came out later on. But no, I did not grow up in a butcher shop. I grew up in the suburbs in Schenectady, upstate.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, that's really it, yeah.
So when did you, why knife making, and how long have you been making knives?
I made my first knife, I guess, a bit over 5 years ago, between 5 and 6 years ago. I was living down in a little town south of Atlanta called McDonough.
Get out.
Yeah.
Did you know I was from Athens, Joel?
No.
Yeah. Born and raised in Athens. Lived in Atlanta for 13 years.
Yeah.
I think I might have. Okay. Maybe that's why I'm all into you. Okay.
All right.
So did you start making knives in Atlanta?
Yeah.
I mean, in McDonough?
Yeah. I started down there. It was a sort of time in my life where I was taking a bit of a back to basics approach, you know.
Wow.
I went down there to finish the manuscript of a novel I was working on, And it didn't, you know, I couldn't sell it. So it was like a rethink everything. I was, you know, I had this great idea that I was going to be a novelist and that would be my wonderful life. So I had to sort of, you know, rethink things. And I picked it up as a, I was doing all kinds of different stuff. I was building little pieces of furniture. I designed a little cabin that I started work on, different stuff like this. And the knife making, for some reason, I made that first knife and it just like stuck. I was just hooked.
So you didn't apprentice with anyone. You basically taught yourself how to make a knife.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of information available out there, on the internet and in books and things like this. So we had this nasty little shed with like kudzu growing in the window in our backyard. So I set up shop in there and just spent, you know, every night till about 3:30 a.m. messing around in there. And yeah.
Amazing. So how many knife makers are there in the United States? I never really even think about some of the very basic things, but is it an American made thing, or are people still doing it? Is it they're young people or people that are 80 years old and they're dying tomorrow? And I mean,
hopefully they're not dying tomorrow. No, there are loads and loads of hobbyist knife makers, hundreds and hundreds, who sort of do this kind of thing kind of in there. It's like a subculture, the knife collecting community and the knife making community. Mostly it's not folding knives that you would sort of put in your pocket, and knives like collector's knives like Bowie knives and things like this.
But you're not a hobbyist. You are the real deal.
Yeah, there are very few. It's a tough little racket to sort of make a living at, because each piece, when you hand make knives, it's really time consuming. So there are very few, you know, kitchen knife makers in the States. There's like under five that actually are like,
are you
professionals
serious?
That sort of
five and you being one.
Yeah. There's three or four that I know. Yeah.
So is this maybe a viable option for young people who want to make knives? And
No.
Why do you say that? You don't think so?
Well, you know what? I was talking to some people not too long ago about how I sort of like learned to do this, and I really don't. I think it would be very hard to learn to do this in the city. I had a space that I could sort of do that, like learn in and get dirty. Like, you couldn't grind knives in your apartment, man. You'd get black lung in like a week. You know, you have to do it in a separate space. And
so it's not like the DIY butcher thing that everyone's doing right now.
No, not really. Okay. I mean, you know, yeah, no. I mean, if you could find a place to do it, and if you can afford, the thing about living down in a town like McDonough too, is that like, you know, rents, my rent for a house was a quarter of what I pay now. So if I sold like one knife a month, I'd be all right on rent.
It's so that way here. We're all about everyday folks here at Hot Grease. But you know, every now and then the everyday person needs to splurge. So tell me one knife, and more so I want you to break down the anatomy of a knife, because I think a lot of people really don't get a knife. They just think a knife.
Okay.
And just a range of how much a great knife from Cut Brooklyn would start at.
A knife from my shop runs about for my fully handmade pieces, it's about $400 for my standard chef's knife is a little over 9 inches. So, and it runs about $400.
So you have a knife in the studio. Break down the anatomy, and more so when you're breaking down the anatomy, talk about the time to make, because there's a great video, I think, on chow.com. And you're actually talking about the days, and the time that it takes to make each little segment or piece or whatever you want to call it on the knife.
Yeah. Well, so the first thing I do is I order the steel straight from the mill. So it shows up at my shop in these big sheets. And then I cut out I scribe out the shape on the sheet, and then I cut it out. I have an assistant back at the shop that's back there cutting out a bunch of stuff right now for me, help me out. So the shape is cut out, and then it's sort of, you know, I don't go by templates exactly. I use the knives that came from the last batch, and
gotcha.
It's kind of important to let a design evolve a little bit. So it changes. Each knife's just a hair bit different, you know. So I cut it out, and then I shape it, drill it. I'll put my name on the tang, and then I send my knives off.
Now,
to
what's
heat
the
treatment.
Tang?
Yeah, this would be the anatomy section. This is the tang is the part of the metal part of the blade that extends into the handle.
Gotcha.
So this part, so this sort of silver line. This would be referred to as a full tang knife. My knives, as it just kind of goes all the way back. Some knives have a tang that goes part way back.
Gotcha.
Let's see. It goes off to heat. The steel I use is pretty high tech stuff, so it needs to be like cryogenically quenched and held to soak at really specific temperatures.
So the things you just described, is that an all day process, or how long does it take to make a complete knife?
Because there's a little gap, it's tough to say. I send the knives off and they come back, and then I sort of finish after they come back from heat. It's a full day process. Yeah. I don't make a knife in a day though, because there are a few kind of parts of building a knife that really beat me up. Like when I grind the blade, I'm always grinding my fingers up a good bit. And when you hand sand the blade, which is the next step, that always wears me out pretty good. So I'll do one day and one the next day.
So it's 2 days for one knife, and they're gorgeous knives. I know that sounds crazy. Thanks. People are like, what? What does she mean, gorgeous knives? I mean, it's a piece of art. Literally, it is a piece of art. So I have a bonus question for you, Joel. What is your favorite comfort food dish that requires a knife?
It is the season, so I'm an enormous fan of like really, really good and tasty stews and soups. I made a really good Guinness stew this past weekend that I think I lived in Dublin for about a year, so like it brings me back there a little
What's
bit.
In it?
Guinness stew. Guinness and a little bit of beef stock, beef. Carrots, flour, the real basics.
Just basic, like just add a can of some stout Guinness. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Oh. Yeah, prunes. There's prunes in it that like sweetens it up a little bit because the Guinness is kind of bitter. But if you do it right, it's just super good.
So can listeners find your knives in stores? Or how would someone go about getting a knife from Cut Brooklyn?
Right. At this point, I'm on about a year wait for my work.
Wow.
Yeah, it just takes a long time to do, and I can only make so many a week. They're not really available in stores at the moment. They just need to go to my website.
Did I hear a rumor that you're coming out with a in-store line of knives, like mass market?
Yeah, that's sort of going on right now. I just ordered a huge batch of steel of some new steel that I've been testing out from Carpenter Technologies out in Pennsylvania, and so that's sort of in the works. I hope to have the first prototypes out in mid-May.
So we would find them in like Brooklyn Kitchen.
Mm-hmm, probably so, yeah. Maybe. I'm still so working on kind of the retailers that'll be sort
cool.
of
that'll very carry cool. them.
But yeah, they should be around.
This is completely fascinating. Uh-huh. We really need Thanks. More time with you because, oh my gosh, this is fascinating.
Right.
Joel, thank you so much for joining us on Hot Grease.
You're very welcome.
We totally pleasure. Appreciate seeing the craftiness of your work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for chatting or listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network for all the greasy, hot tidbits of food news. Until then, always take the road less traveled.